We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with the television listing from the Times, read by Charlotte Green.
Holiday heaven. Alice Beer enjoys a driving break in Scotland and a Buckinghamshire man in Tenerife.
Thanks to Simon Williams of Henley-on-Thames for that. Let us meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Linda Smith. And their nail-biting challenge this week comes from Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Francis, an easy one. Whose numerous challenges set the tone?
New Labour PLC has been having its AGM. Shareholders meeting. Actually, it's not so much a shareholders meeting, more as a sponsor fest thing. John Prescott was sponsored by Spud You Like, and I sort of half expected Blair to come on stage looking like a Formula One car, festooned with logos and corporate adverts and things from supermarket chains, Colombian drug cartels, that sort of thing. But he gave this speech with no commercial breaks, very impressively. Tremendous restraint. And all the media said it was the greatest speech he'd ever delivered. And it sounded to me exactly like every previous conference speech, just as a random multiple pile-up of nouns and adjectives. So, you know, future, not the past. New, not old. We want not backsliding, but backhanders.
We want to challenge education, challenge business, challenge Annika. It made no sense at all. He seems to have combined now the nastiness of Margaret Thatcher with the complete incomprehensibility of Neil Kinnock, really. They should check his cellar at home in Islington, I think. They'll probably find a skeleton with a blonde wig and a handbag and a blue suit, and he'll be going, I didn't stitch up the nurses. It was Mother. Mother!
He also challenged the media, though, didn't he, to stop kind of carping and stop criticising
him. The sneer squad.
Yeah, and I thought, no, there are some challenges that are just too difficult to meet, really. Have a car with a light on top and go through.
Amazing genius of the Labour Party to make you nostalgic for the leader before you thought was rubbish.
I noticed today there's talk of allowing the police to confiscate people's assets if they think they're probably involved in crime. You know, it's a bit like zero tolerance. You think, well, that's fine as long as it doesn't proceed to zero evidence.
Did you notice, Francis, that Mandelson's speech was received in almost complete silence and all the jokes fell flat?
Except by the Daily Mirror.
The Sun.
It was an amazing piece in The Sun written by David Wooding. And he quoted the jokes. Always a mistake if you say Randy has them rolling in the aisles. Best not to say what he had them rolling in the aisles with, because he then quoted it and say, hello, I'm Peter Mandelson, I'm Secretary of State for Trade and Industry. They could hardly contain themselves.
No, you can all watch this stuff. It clashes with Countdown. I firmly believe Richard Whiteley is one of our great lost leaders.
2 points to Francis. Linda, why was old King Cole such a miserable old soul?
Oh, yes, Chancellor Cole. What a dry question. Chancellor Cole...
Was a dry man, though.
No.
Do you know he weighs 27 stone?
But it doesn't mean he's moist, does it?
Well, big man, that was the most exciting revelation about
the
generation.
Was that a raffle you did or something? Guess the weight of the German Chancellor. Why do you know how much he weighs?
Because in one of the farewell Chancellor Cole pieces this week, it says every year he goes off for 10 days and fasts, that's his summer holiday, to lose a bit of weight. And on one of these occasions, a nurse happened to look at the scales when he checked in and noticed it said 27 stone.
So he fasts and he weighs 27 stone.
Just shows your dieting doesn't work, doesn't it?
Wouldn't have said 27 stone if it was a German scales. I've just worked it out. It was 131.3 kilos.
You just worked that out?
Just worked that out.
I think you're watching too much Countdown.
The landslide victory for the German Social Democrats under the Blair-like leadership of Gerhard Schroeder. Herr Schroeder applauded the fact that Europe now has left-wing prime ministers in Germany, France and Brit... Well, 2 out of 3, isn't that? Alan, listen to your piece of music. Europe, I'm America,
There's a growing feeling of hysteria, conditioned to respond to all the threats, and the rhetorical speeches of the Soviet. Mr. Khrushchev said he will bury you.
Yes, I always used to think he was singing conditioned to respond to all the threats and rhetorical speeches of the Soviets. Terrible multilateral napkin threat.
The Russians by Sting. Alan, which Prime Minister was thinking the unthinkable 50 years before Blair?
It's Winston.
It is.
Winston had a plan for continuous war, rather like Mao and continuous revolution. Winston had done very well in the war, and Winston thought, if I can just prolong this war, I can be Prime Minister forever. And his plan was that on July the 8th, just as soon as the blokes had got into their demob suits, he would blow a whistle, they'd all get back into uniform again and take on the Russians.
I bet that was met with a lot of enthusiasm, that plan. Imagine.
We didn't tell anybody.
He must have told somebody. He couldn't have fought the Russians on his own. No, he needed to. Surely you need to inform the British Army if you're going to start.
No, he had a sort of ground plan on the back of a cigar band. Mm.
The Operation Unthinkable report, which included plans for a dastardly preemptive strike against the encroaching Red Hordes, had been thought long lost. The report's final page detailed the steps necessary to transform Stalin's image from that of Cuddly Joe, our friend, to a raving reactionary. This has included a wave of black propaganda and getting the Russian dictator to become a panellist on The Moral Maze. So the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. Francis, whose innings finally came to an end at 211?
I think it's the chaps at Lord's.
It is.
Is it? Yes, they voted to recognise women. They wouldn't recognise them because they've never actually met one, but they have been told that there are these creatures out there, and they've decided to have a shifty, see what they're like, give them a whirl, that sort of thing. So they're going to let them in as members of the MCC. But since there is, I think, a 25-year waiting list for membership of the MCC at the moment, there's not going to be any mad rush. They're setting up a women's cricket team as a gesture of good faith, which is going to play a number of matches, though not against the men's team, because it's most embarrassing if the women won, which they always say they would.
Rachel Hayo-Flint, actually, because she's down to apply for membership, she said that, you know, it would take so long she'd probably be dead by the time. But I don't think dead people are disqualified from being there. I think she'll be all right. I think there's quite a few.
The first thing they've done, of course, as they would, have laid down a dress code for women. They'll be allowed into the pavilion if they're wearing appropriate clothes. Anybody who's been to Lord and seen the MCC, they know that they have these amazing trousers.
Go on.
No. You can keep an ox down either leg. And men walk around. They just walk around with these trousers very spread, just rattling their chain. I don't think women can learn to do that.
Rattling their chain? What chain?
The change.
Change.
Well, the change.
change is normally a euphemism. Yes, tremendously hot. You see, what they have is these plastic cushions that you hire for £2. And on old gentlemen, it gets tremendously hot. They generate this enormous amount of heat, and they have to get away and then rattle their trousers as the heat comes out the bottom. It's rather like escaping from Stalag Luft 3. You shake the air out of the bottom of your trousers so it forms little piles. And they're going to make women do this.
The mystery to me is why they think women would want to join the MCC. Because once a year I get invited by my literary agent, who's on the committee of the MCC, to go and visit his box at Lord's. And you look along the balcony, and there's...
Is it crowded?
No.
With all this change in there.
No. And hence the baggy trousers. Plenty of room for everyone. Yes, it is Michael Sissons. And you look along the balcony of the other boxes, and you see Geoffrey Archer, John Major, most of Alan Corran's friends, and you see. What sort of woman would want to belong to a club that had these people as members?
I'll tell you why, because I played cricket with Michael Sissons. He's the only man I know whose box is dented from the inside.
Club president asked those members still unhappy with the vote to admit women into the long room, at least to let the dust settle, as it would give the little ladies something to do when they finally arrive. 2 points to Francis. Linda, who wants £25 million, not a penny more, not a penny less?
Oh, yes. Geoffrey Archer, of course. Who weighs? Geoffrey Archer, he's selling his Andy Warhol paintings, he hopes, for 25 million quid, apparently. He's got loads and loads of these paintings. A bit crowded, I suppose, in that little tower block he lives in. Need the space. Mary's mother's coming. Got to clear out the back room. And so he's selling them all off. And he's got something like 10 of the Marilyn Monroe ones. I don't know why you'd have 10.
Proof of his financial genius, yet again, by imbecility, that he spent the last 10 years acquiring this huge collection of Warhols. And then he saw one sold for $1 million somewhere recently. So he decided to sell the whole lot in one go. I mean, first thing he'll do is collapse the market. And so, he won't make very much money at all.
So, Francis, why aren't you richer than Geoffrey Archer, then?
Well, because...
You're so clever.
All right.
No, I can see the logic of what you're saying.
That's like saying, if I'm not as rich as Richard Branson, how dare I criticise him for not running his trains
on? No, I'm not saying that at all. No,
anyway, no.
Don't salt now for the rest of the programme.
But Archer's a great fan of Warhol. He's got a lot of the Campbell soup pictures.
Didn't Andy Warhol say that everyone will be famous for 15 minutes? That means Geoffrey Archer's had all our turns, hasn't he?
Former Tory chairman is said to have been inspired by Warhol in the 1960s. The artist made a feature film called Trash, and Lord Archer wrote several novels based on that premise. 2 points to Linda. Andy, listen to this.
Take that look off your face.
Take That Look Off Your Face by Marty Webb. Who's planning to change the face of transplant surgery?
I did glance at this story about they're going to start transplanting people's faces. You get a brochure, and they say, who do you want? I mean, it's a bit rough on the other person, because they get your face, presumably. I don't know, is there a possibility of your body rejecting your face? Because that'd be a bit embarrassing, wouldn't it? You know, you're at a dinner party and your face starts to say, I've had enough of this. Where's that bloke I was snuck on before?
God, it'd be terrible to get an Andrew Lloyd Webber, wouldn't it? Blimey, here's the good news. It went very well.
Yes, plastic surgeons at Louisville University, Kentucky, believe that full-face transplants will soon be possible. Already we've seen the world's first arm transplant on New Zealander Clint Hallam.
The other story about Hallam this week is that the donor arm came from an alcoholic. How do they know? Do you drink much? No, I spill most of it. You know, I mean...
And the donor bit his nails as well.
But he's not still. He's dead. He is an ex-donor.
No, but poor Mr. Hallam has inherited this bitten hand and he doesn't know what to do about it.
Well, but
Francis, if you haven't got an arm and someone gives you an arm, you know, I mean, you don't moan. It's, oh, I'm not having this. Look at the fingernail. I think probably you're fairly grateful, like. Look at the state of that. I mean, there's fussy, you know.
I do believe this forefinger has been up someone's nose. Not having that.
At the end of round 2, the scores are everybody 8. And we start round 3 with a clipping from Scotland on Sunday.
Dougie Walker last night proved his worth as a team player in a comfortable triumph for the British 4x100m quartet. Walker's third leg proved decisive in ensuring victory.
Thanks to George Davies Stewart of Hereford for that. Francis, who wants to give us this day our daily garlic bread and deliver us door to door?
Well, this is probably the chappie who founded Domino's Pizza. He's giving away all his money to charity, Catholic charities. 40 years ago, he set up Domino's Pizza, made billions of pounds out of it, dollars, and now at the age of 60-something, he's decided there's more to life than delivering pizzas.
He's giving all his money to the church, but it'll never turn up, will it? I mean, there'll be a phone call at 10:30 saying, tell us exactly where this church is. Money's fallen off in the gut and been eaten by a cat.
This is the first ever News Quiz question I've had which has made me hungry.
Linda, listen to this.
I have always thought in the back of my mind, she's an onion.
Cheese and Onions by the Ruttles. Linda, which tea leaves know their cheese and onions?
Oh, this is a lovely story. This is this great cheese heist. 6 tons of the finest cheese has been stolen from this dairy in Somerset, and it's a very professional job because they just went for the good stuff. You know, they walked straight past the Vashki Rear, that's kid stuff, and just grabbed the mature cheddar because... you won't want the immature cheddar, because that'll be a nightmare in the van, going, are we there yet? Are we there?
I am so hungry now. I can't believe this. My stomach is... I'll just sit further away from the microphone. I want to know, how do you palm a cheese? Do you go to a cheese fence?
Do you get cheese fences? Yeah, I don't know.
Do you come out and say...
You get cheese straws, don't you?
I've got it.
Why don't it be Jeffrey with his war holes all over again? Yeah. That they'll flood the market with this cheese. And the price will just drop through the floor.
I think you're onto something here, because one thing I know that Francis knows is that Jeffrey gives everybody a £5 cheese every Christmas, doesn't he?
Yes.
So next Christmas, I'd have a good look at this cheese you get.
Actually, that... I'd like to correct you there. He hasn't given me any cheese.
But you're not anybody.
You said everybody.
Well,
he will do next year before the voting for Lord Mayor of London.
Customs and excise officers have confirmed that there are many ways the cheese could have been smuggled out of the country, leading to fears that the valuable cheddar may already have been melted down for fondue. Andy, where does mensana not lead to a corpora sano?
Oh, great, I get a question in bloody Latin. They get cheese, they get... Yes, I think I know this. I know about this because it's about Mensa.
Hmm.
And I was thrown out of Mensa for making them feel inadequate, they said. Basically, it was filling with hoi polloi. And a woman called Julie Baxter is forming a breakaway group of Mensa. I don't quite know what's she going to call it. Do we know? Immensa.
What does that Latin translate as, then?
Mensana and corpora sana means a healthy man in a healthy body, doesn't it?
Doesn't mean anoraks with no friends, then.
Mrs. Baxter's new organisation hopes to be attractive to the more well-rounded Mensa member, the kind of person who can not only name all the Doctor Who's in order, but their assistants as well.
Sarah Jane.
Alan, where was a catastrophe just a whisker away?
Well, you're not talking about the Potter's Bar Pew.
Yes.
The old Bill went out with guns to shoot a cat that wasn't there. And it could be a dog, or it could be a fox in a wig or something with a new face. It could have been anything.
Yeah, it's part of the new zero panther tolerance. I'm very pleased this question came out, because it gives me a chance to put in a brazen plug. Because I go filming next week for Drop the Dead Donkey, and we have actually got a storyline about the Beast of Bodmin Moor, and hopefully our episode will look terribly topical, which means it was worthwhile taking that puma to Hertfordshire and releasing it. Because Channel 4 felt it was a rather cheap publicity stunt.
Amazingly, the scores at the end of round 3 are everybody 12. Linda, whose criticisms of a county fell flat?
Norfolk. This woman, June somebody, who lives in Norfolk, wrote to the paper to say just how rubbish Norfolk was, really, that there was a sort of certain element of pointing at aeroplanes going on, and basically that it was a bit like, I'm treading carefully here, that it was a bit like Deliverance with little power cruisers, really, and people wrote into the paper saying, oh, this is outrageous, backward, us, burn the witch. And... didn't go down well at all. And boring, Norfolk boring. Good God, we've got a gas museum in Fakenham. And she's under a bit of a fatwa now, which apparently in Norfolk takes the form of unwanted pizzas being delivered to you. So it's not too scary, but I do feel a bit for this woman, because a similar thing has actually happened to me when I made a joke, perhaps unwisely, about my hometown of Erith, implying that it wasn't exactly Manhattan of a Friday night round at Liza Minnelli's house. And there was a big article in the local paper, the Erith and Crayford Observer, incorporating the Kentish Times, saying, Erith slammed as dull. There was a whole whole bit by local councillors saying, this is an outrageous slur, Erith isn't dull, we're twinned with a town that's quite near Paris. This can't possibly be true. And then it ended by saying, this is the second time in 1 week Erith has been branded boring. The first time was when the competition to name the new Erith Leisure Centre was won by the competitor who suggested it be named the Erith Leisure Centre.
June Wilson has received hate mail and police protection after writing a letter to her local paper saying that the majority of people from Norfolk were very boring. Angry locals have threatened to come round to her house and talk about their beer mat collections. The East Anglian Tourist Board has hit back, claiming Norfolk is a trendy weekend destination for Londoners. The county was also popular for a short while with men from Essex, until they discovered that the Norfolk Broads were just a bunch of waterways. And who was hopping mad at having to toss her salad?
It's an half food question, I don't believe it. This one is about toting the salad. A lady went to Sainsbury's, I think it was, and her salad was so fresh, it had live animals in it. It had an African toad, I think. The account I read says she ran out into the garage and screamed so loud she got chest pains. It's just one way of approaching it. I mean, I think that was the most constructive way of handling it. But anyway, I don't know where this toad is now.
The toad's in the custody of Sainsbury's. They're examining it in their labs to see if it is at all poisonous or not.
Right. How would Sainsbury's know? What are they doing, licking it? I mean, are you telling me that there is a Sainsbury's toad laboratory?
Yes.
Is this... I thought this was the first toad they'd found in the Sainsbury's.
Well, it might catch on. Sun-dried tomatoes seemed strange when they first came out, didn't they?
My theory is that sun-dried tomatoes are not tomatoes. We've only got their word for it. They don't actually look like tomatoes.
What do you think they are, Andy?
I think they're prunes that have been sprayed.
In a lock-up garage down in Essex somewhere.
That's right. We're on food again, aren't we? I'm going to black out in a minute, I mean.
It's a shame that bloke sold Domino's pizza, or we could have sold it.
Yeah, Domino's toes, he wouldn't have made much money, would he?
If he
was on the back of the bike when I left, sir.
Alan, which Wiltshire woman won't be calling on her husband to paper over the cracks in their marriage?
Yeah, there's something very, very strange about this. This bloke's got a lot of drills and things, and everywhere he moves, bits of the house fall off. And the roof came off, and he blew all the lights, and the drain covers came up, and he's a sort of DIY total incompetent.
He did some fantastic things, though. He was putting up a coat rack, and because he'd had problems with, you know, hitting electric cables before, he turned the electricity off, and then, of course, his electric drill didn't work. But he didn't think, oh, that's because I've turned the electricity off. He took the drill to pieces to find out what was wrong with it, and then decided, oh, sorry, I'll go and buy a new one. Oh, and another thing he did that was rather brilliant, he was laying a carpet in the bedroom, and he got round that tricky bed in the middle of the bedroom problem by cutting a great big hole in the carpet.
Is that wrong, then?
The annoying thing our Bill used to do was to just sing the first line of Born Free. And never anymore, just Born Free. Da-da-da-da-da. All day long, or then slightly misquoting other songs like God Didn't Make the Little Green Peppers.
Food again.
Yes, DIY enthusiast Christopher Andrews has been banned by his wife from carrying out any further work on their home after exploits included setting fire to the curtains, flooding the house, and drilling a hole in his own leg. Mrs. Andrews admitted being shocked by her husband's ineptitude. She said on one occasion she'd arrived home to find the living room in such a state she spent 20 minutes searching for Carol Smiley. Before we reveal the final amazing scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Bridge North Journal. Two men were stopped by police in much Wenlock when their foreign accents sparked a tip-off that they could be illegal immigrants. Constable Michael Poynton of Telford Police said a resident saw people looking roughly dressed with rucksacks and thought they might be Albanians. A police officer went and had a word with one of them and discovered they were from Cornwall.
Linda.
This is sent in by Tony Meacock. It's from The Guardian. In Memphis, Tennessee, a pregnant woman is suing the pharmacist who sold her the contraceptive device that so evidently failed to work. The woman spread the contraceptive jelly on toast and ate it before engaging in unprotected sex. She demands damages of $500,000, despite saying, "Who has time to sit around reading directions these days, especially when you're sexually aroused?"
See, even that was food in a way.
Andy, what morsel have you brought
up? This is from Gareth Neville, and he found it in the Northern Echo. Newcastle United fans Fiona and Paul Dixon are hoping that former Chelsea boss Ruud Gullit will help them in a naming game. The couple, whose children, Keegan, 4, Beardsley, 2, and 15-month-old Dalgleish, are named after former United heroes, are expecting another addition to their team in 3 weeks. Fiona said, "The baby's due at the end of September, so Ruud Gullit's got 3 weeks to find us a name. We wouldn't use his name because Gullit Dixon sounds silly."
Albert.
It comes from the Loughborough Echo. It says, "Alerted by screams, the supermarket senior security officer entered the female staff toilet, where his attention was drawn to a lavatory pan containing an entire ox tongue. It's possible someone stole it and then, afraid of being apprehended, tried unsuccessfully to flush it away," said the manager, Mr. Sanders, "but I should imagine it was only a joke. Ours is a high-spirited staff. Last Christmas, someone put condoms on all the cucumbers."
Thank you all. The final scores are, everybody, 16 points. And we leave you with an article from the Daily Telegraph.
The lesbian lover of a hospital consultant's wife denied in court yesterday that she had kicked her with army-style boots. She said some of the injuries had been caused when they fell over a poof during the row.
Thanks to Derek Thomas of South London for that. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.